VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 423, recorded on May 2nd, 2016. Hello and welcome to the 423rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 256th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So yeah, we actually have some news that broke like an hour ago. So that was sent to the top. But Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been trying to finish the second chapter of the King's Quest game. It's kind of a dark chapter because you have to choose, like this time when you're choosing between compassion, strength, or wisdom, or cunning, the characters that represent those aspects or virtues are, their life is kind of on the line, so you're making kind of a Sophie's choice, and it makes this chapter kind of dark. So I'm looking forward to the romantic comedy after this one.
Okay. How about you, TJ, aside from Dark Souls 3?
Well, let me think. You kind of cut me to the quick there. let me see. You know, I haven't been... I can't really lie. I haven't been playing anything besides Dark Souls 3 because okay. I'm trying to finish the game. I've gotten into...
What? You didn't finish it in 40 minutes like other people have?
No, I've been taking my time and enjoying it thoroughly. I think I've said it before, but I love the world that Dark Souls 3 takes place in, and I often stop at points of the game and just get a look around and see what's happening, see like the panoramic view, just like the gorgeous textures on the environment.
Maybe we should
it's awesome.
You and your friends do a Dark Souls 3 discussion.
Other than that, I also I got to the second to last boss before the end of the game. And then I stopped and went over to this optional area that actually has one of the hardest bosses in the game, which is the Nameless King. And, I'm working my way towards that fight, and I don't think it's going to go well for the first, like, 40 times, but I'm going to give it a try.
Okay. I went back to Master Rhyme because there was several updates, and there's more races. You can now do a custom race. I delved into it a little bit. I plan to go back into it later. Like I said, I really don't like doing early access because I like to do a finished product, but I wanted to see what was different. And that's basically it. I mean, there's so many other games I could have played, but I just haven't been able to. Right now, I'm just looking for a missing jersey, which I have no idea where it went. Because I'm playing in a softball league and I can't find my jersey anywhere. So that's annoying me to no end. But otherwise, we have a lot of news today. Like I said, this first news item just popped up like an hour ago, and I know it'll be interesting to Scott. Stardew Valley multiplayer console ports confirmed. This comes to us from GameSpot. Stardew Valley has sold more than a million copies, and now developer Eric Barone, a.k.a. Concerned Ape, has announced that the cooperative multiplayer console versions and more content are in the works for the farming and life simulator. Barone will continue to work by himself on the design and content, while publisher Chucklefish will handle the technical side of multiplayer and console ports, the developer announced on Stardew Valley's website. It's not been announced that the multiplayer will be released, when the multiplayer will be released, or what consoles the farming game will release on, but Barone notes they're, quote-unquote, actively being worked on. So, what's being planned? The version 1.1, a substantial content update. You'll have co-op multiplayer, localizing for non-English reasons, Mac and Linux ports, console ports, merchandise, more late-game content, new farm buildings, new crops, new artisan goods, new advanced farming and producing mechanics. Shane and Emily will be marriage candidates. They will also have more events and dialogue as a result. I'm pretty sure Scott will explain why that's significant later. More marriage content for all spouses, more events for non-marriage NPCs, improvements / additions to mining and combat, ability to move buildings and other convenience features, more bug fixes, more secrets, and more small fun touches into the world. So I'm guessing that Shane and Emily are core NPCs that bring you into the town, maybe?
I have to look up exactly who Emily and Shane were again, but I don't think they were the ones that brought you in. The ones that brought you in, I thought, were Leah and another guy that, like, he disappears after he brings you in.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, the co-op multiplayer really interests me, because I think that would be fun.
Okay,
the combat
so,
definitely needed some improvement.
According to this, Shane is a villager who lives in Pelican Town and is often rude and unhappy. If the
he's the jerk. Yeah, I don't
Yeah,
like
the player
him.
Chooses to befriend him, though his attitude towards them will start to change. He works at the JoJo Mart most days.
Mm, yeah.
So...
He seemed kind of like a jerk. That now I remember who that is. But, yeah. The character I wanted was already married, so it was like, ah, so now I'm just trying to figure out who I want. But
well,
it is cool that they developed the other characters more,
so,
at least.
Emily is a villager who also lives in Pelican Town. Her home is to the south of the town square, right next to Jody's. She works most evenings at the saloon. She likes to make her own clothing and can be difficult to come by in town.
Mm.
So I guess she's a night owl.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, she was unmarriable, but now she is marriable.
Oh, that's good. And need more choices, I think.
So, yeah. The question is, would you play? Are you really looking forward to co-op multiplayer? Because that's one of the things about Minecraft, and you know this best of all, that a lot of the fun from Minecraft comes from doing co-op stuff.
Yes, definitely. Building different things, building different farms, or, you know, different ideas, and it looks like you can move buildings around, and I don't know if they mean your buildings or the town's buildings. So that'll be interesting to see what they mean by that.
Well, the town is designed very haphazardly, but like a real town.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe, I don't know. You better be able to spend a lot. Imagine massive construction equipment or something.
Well, there's the community center. I know you can rebuild when you do your little collection.
Or you can sell it to JoJo Mart.
you could probably... I would like to put the JoJo Mart out of business somehow, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, the thing is that JoJo Mart, if I know this correctly, one of the early decisions you have is either to turn the community center back into community center or just sell the property to JoJo Mart. And it affects the future gameplay. You know, you have cheaper goods, but people are less happy because you're buying the cheaper goods at the JoJo Mart.
Yeah, that's not good there. I've been trying to improve the community center and buy from the Pierres, and it's a lot of work, though, because it just, you feel, it's like, I thought I was going to kind of escape the rat race, but I still kind of feel like I'm in that, because I have to plan what I'm doing each day, because you can only save between...
Well,
when
I thought at
bed.
Some point you can automate your farms when you get the technology for it.
When you get the technology for it, yeah, you can get water and whatnot, but in the meantime, you can't really do everything, you know, you can't go into town, talk to people for a little bit, and then go mining. You either talk to people and try to develop relationships, or you go mining.
Well, you know, the thing is that people seem to... See, here's the thing. Someone told me that you don't have to big a huge farm. You could just do the minimum on your farm.
Yeah.
You know, just have a small little farm that you have the time to do other things because your farm is tiny.
Yeah.
You know, but people are very... I guess people just want to have a big farm, and which I guess is sort of like defeating the purpose. You want to relax. Okay, here's your farm. Now... You want to not relax while making your farm, or just make a small farm and relax and talk to people?
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, the talking with the people, it's like you can talk to them, but you can't really interact with them the way I would want to. It's just like you just talk to them, and when it's their birthday, you give them a present, or if you get like the daily quest, if you happen to have whatever it is they want. Because a lot of times I don't have it, or it's out of season. It's kind of difficult to get the friendship up, I think. It takes time.
So if you do the co-op, are you going to have friends help you just maintain your farm? Or are you going to have them do the farm so you can go talk to people?
I don't know. We'll have to figure that out, see if we want to do that or not.
DJ.
Yes.
So this is not your kind of game, is it? It's basically, you know, it's a Harvest Moon.
No, I think I would play it if I had time for it. I just don't. That's really what it comes down to. It looks charming and very interesting, and it's made by Chucklefish, which I didn't know that until
very
recently.
It's published by Chucklefish. It's not made by Chucklefish.
Published, but they, like, Chucklefish, they get behind some really cool stuff. I really enjoy Starbound, and Stardew Valley has kind of that same, like, sort of charming do-it-yourself aesthetic to it.
And yeah, and it has really beautiful music. It really helps the atmosphere.
And Eric did the music, too. He did everything. He did the music, he did the graphics, he did the programming and all that stuff. It's completely a one-man job, and Chucklefish, as the article says, we'll be doing the multiplayer and console ports, so it should be interesting, because, like I said, I wonder how less popular Minecraft would be if you didn't have that co-op in which people couldn't come into your world, you know, and help you out, or just explore, or let random strangers screw up your place.
It probably would be less popular, but I'm glad that it is multiplayer. That seems to be the best way to keep a game going, is be open for multiplayer and flexible in modification.
Well, you keep on telling me stories about you having to, well, I can't go because me and my friends are going to be working on this in Minecraft. We're going to be really busy doing this stuff.
Yeah. We have UHCs and other stuff to do. Yeah. We do co-op stuff on that.
So you said you took a break from Stardew, though.
Well, yeah, I've been trying to do other games as well. Like I said, the King's Quest game, I want to finish that because Chapter 3 came out, and so I want to finish Chapter 2.
So, but the thing is that, you know, when you hear that there's going to be an update coming, does that sort of make you go, okay, I'm not going to play it now. I'm going to wait for the update so that I can deal. I don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, like, well, if they're going to change it, I'm just going to wait till it changes before I do anything.
Yeah, I'll do that, yeah.
I mean, is that something that, well, TJ, do you have that attitude too when you find out there's going to be a major update coming? Do you sort of like back off the game because they're going to change a lot of stuff, so I'm just going to hang back and let them do whatever, and then I'll come back when they've added the update?
That was definitely a thing, like with the other Chucklefish game I mentioned, Starbound, where world wipes weren't all that uncommon, and. That if that was the case, I would probably lean back and just wait to see what happens, because there's nothing more degrading than putting all that work into something like, God, I had some kick-ass settlements in Starbound, and then they just got swept away with updates.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen here. You know, they're just going to add stuff.
Right. So that's not so bad. If it's just adding stuff, that's perfectly fine. I don't see any reason why not to play and up until the update happens, and even through it.
Yeah, Scott, how deep did you get into Stardew anyway? Did you start making artisan goods? Did you make advanced goods, or?
I don't know. I don't think I've gotten to the artisan goods yet. Just trying to figure out how everything works. I'm trying to get sap from trees.
You mean you didn't make any mayonnaise?
Not yet. I haven't even gotten the chicken coop up yet. I have to get iron, and I have to go, like, the level, I don't know what level to get the iron yet. I haven't even found it yet.
Yeah, I see. I keep on bouncing back and forth on this game, whether I want to get it or not, you know? I know it's an enormous time sink, which is fine with me at these days because I'm not working. I'm looking for a better job. And, you know, maybe, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I saw, by the way, they're selling Castle Crashers for under $8 on the Xbox One, and that's a game I never played.
So yeah, I played that on PlayStation 3.
I didn't play it on when it was originally on the PlayStation. I never really played it when it was on the original Xbox 360. So maybe I should, you know, play some of it, because there's a lot of good deals out there right now.
Yeah.
The problem is that I can't do it. I can't play them all.
Yeah, that is tough.
So, anyways, TJ, take the next item.
Alrighty, one moment. Nintendo NX launching March 2017. New mobile games on the way. From Tom's Guide. Nintendo's new console is less than a year away. The Japanese games giant announced that its highly anticipated NX console will launch globally in March 2017. With the latest Legend of Zelda games slated to arrive for both the NX and Wii U. However, there's no price yet. The console has been rumored to be Android-based, and many have speculated that the NX may replace both the Wii U and the 3DS by functioning as both a home console and portable device. Don't expect to hear more about the NX at this year's E3 either. Reporting from Nintendo's financial briefing in Japan today, April 27th, The Wall Street Journal's Takashi Mochizuki tweeted, "No NX at E3. We'll focus on New Zelda." Nintendo confirmed it will launch simultaneously on both Wii U and NX in 2017. This isn't a first for Nintendo. The company previously released The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess in 2006 for both the aging GameCube and the then-new Wii. The latest take on Nintendo's beloved action-adventure series was originally slated for a 2015 release, but has seen multiple delays. Nintendo's new mobile push seems to be paying off, as the company announced that its wacky social networking app, Miitomo, has reached 10 million users. The Big N confirmed that more mobile titles are on the way, including apps inspired by the role-playing series Fire Emblem and colorful life simulator Animal Crossing. According to Nintendo, Fire Emblem for mobile will offer true RPG gameplay, while the Animal Crossing title will be able to interact with the console versions of Nintendo's popular town-building game. Both franchises were on our list of Nintendo games we'd love to see on mobile.
Animal Crossing, no. Animal Crossing exists for me to torture those stupid, repugnant, a-hole, nosy animal neighbors, especially the mayor who's running a racket. He's running a racket in Animal Crossing. I wish there was a way to take a sword to him and just slice him up into tiny little pieces. I mean, if Nintendo wanted to make money, they would tell something five to just make the Pokemon game on the.
I'm frankly surprised that they don't sell DLC for Animal Crossing, because after a while you kind of get everything and it just starts feeling kind of stale, you know, like there's nothing really left to do and you're just kind of doing the same boring kind of grind, and then you're like, just I'm done with it.
You don't like finding bones in the ground and being an archaeologist?
Well, that's after you fun. Find them all, and you just sell them, and you're done.
Well, I've never gotten that far. At that point, I just wanted to find a sword
didn't take
and murder
long.
People.
It really didn't take that long.
So the NX. It was supposed to be, from what I understand, holiday 2016, but they decided, what the heck, we're going to... There's something worrisome about that delay. I don't know what it is, but it's an odd time to release a console in March.
Yeah, that is kind of odd, because they do want to go for that Christmas break or whatever.
But
I kind of do like the idea of having a console where you could play a game, and if you want to continue it on your portable, like if you're going for a long car ride or something, and you can continue playing Zelda on the mobile portion of it.
Well, it's not just that, but they're replacing both the Wii U and the 3DS with one console.
Yeah. That'll be really interesting, and because like I know I saw a picture of what looked like a controller, but if they want to replace the 3DS, they're going to have to put out something way better than that little dinky thing.
Well, the 3DS looks like the controller, the 3DS itself looks like a controller to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it looks like that Wii U tablet, so yeah, it's kind of something like that, so that's fine. But that's not what I saw. What I saw was this little tiny, almost banana clip looking thing. I don't know if it's legit or not.
Does anybody remember Banana Phone?
Yeah.
Banana Phone. Because that was the meme that was going on with the proposed PlayStation 3 controller, if you remember that thing. It was a banana phone.
So Nintendo announced that they're stopping production of the Wii U before the end of this year. They're not releasing the NX until March.
Well, that's, you know what? I don't think anybody's buying the Wii U to begin with. I'm pretty sure that the storerooms are quite full of Wii U's. They don't need to make any more.
Maybe, but if they're planning on releasing any new games at the end of the year and in between the time between NX, well, gosh, I guess people are SOL if they don't have it already.
Well, I don't think Nintendo really cares if there's shortages. We've had that before with Nintendo, if you remember.
I'm sure if you want to get a 3DS or whatever hardware, you still can. I know that people are still running around with N64s and Super Nintendo hardware out there.
You know what also is that all Nintendo's going to have at E3? Just Twilight Princess? Legend of Zelda? That's it? It'll be worse than last year. When all it was Super Mario Maker and a bunch of games that are already out for the 3DS. That's all they showed at E3.
Wow. I guess it does sound like it might not be an interesting E3 then.
Well, at least via Nintendo.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm willing to bet you they'll have some 3DSs there and the things with games that were released a month ago, like they did at E3. I just don't understand Nintendo here. They're just... And, you know, as much as, you know, I'm actually interested in the NX. You know, I haven't owned a Nintendo console since the NES. So if I'm going to go in now, I'm going to go in hard. You know, I might as well, hey, I'll just start. And if it's going to be a handheld console too, great. Because the last Nintendo handheld I owned is the DS. And I still have stuff for it. And, but Nintendo has been stumbling like nothing else since 2008. One after another bad decision. And, you know, it's a good thing they have a crap ton of cash in storage, because they would have been gone by now if they didn't, you know.
Yeah.
And so, I don't think anything has been as bad as the Virtual Boy. That was really a bad one right there.
Yeah, but that's in the, what, in the early, late 80s, early 90s?
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, we're talking about... The thing is that, you know, it's sort of like Microsoft. If Microsoft didn't have Windows, there wouldn't be an Xbox One, you know?
Yeah, and yet Microsoft treats PC like they're the redheaded stepchild.
Well, not anymore, because now they're trying to meld PC One. What's interesting, though, is that for the first time, Microsoft's share of the OS is dipped under 90%, which is significant.
Yeah.
So what might happen is you might see a new iteration of Windows coming out that's even more friendly, and maybe even half off. Or because what they did with Windows 10 was, you know, they offered it for free.
I thought so, Windows 10 was going to be the last
for about a year,
and they were just going to update it.
No, they're going to want to sell Windows.
Oh, yeah,
they can only sell it by saying Windows 11. You know, it might just be a glorified update, but they'll call it Windows 11.
Well, there's still a lot of Windows 7 users out there still. I mean, my company, all their computers are Windows 7. They just upgraded everything to Windows 7. So there's still a lot of Windows customers that'll eventually upgrade.
I suppose. But, you know, by the way, there's more and more confirmation about Microsoft releasing a Xbox One and a half, just like PlayStation is. Sony's releasing a 4.5. So it's going to be very interesting to see. And, you know, Jordan Lund, I asked him about this. He strongly doubts that the NX will be 4K.
I don't care.
That would be a shame, because that would be sort of the only... That's sort of one of the biggest reasons to go after that one, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's going to be the PlayStation 4K, and the Xbox One and a half will have 4K. So you'd think that Nintendo would... But here's the other thing, is that they say they don't want to sell... Well, actually, that's the news item that's coming up. So... We'll reserve further discussion about Nintendo for when that article comes up. For now, Scott, right. Next item.
Oculus Rift arrives at Best Buy stores ahead of pre-orders. This from PC Gamer. Oculus has teamed up with Best Buy to provide in-store demonstrations of the Rift at 48 locations as part of their Intel experience starting May 7th. Additional stores will be added later this summer in case none of those locations work for you. Right now, you'll be able to experience Stream Deck, basically a bunch of VR tech demos, and Crytek The Climb. In the near future, they'll be adding Farlands, a free game for the Rift, to help manage things. Oculus Live will allow you to schedule a Rift demo up to a month in advance. Perhaps more interesting is this tidbit. A small number of Rifts will be available for purchase at select Best Buy stores starting May 7th, and online from Microsoft and Amazon starting May 6th at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Quantities will be extremely limited while we catch up to Rift pre-orders. If you've pre-ordered a Rift and you're still waiting, you can try to buy one at a retail and then update your order status, canceling the pre-order, but keeping your pre-order benefits. Oculus recently offered shipping cost refunds for delayed pre-order shipment that had an estimated ship dates slip into June and July.
You know, This is one of the clumsiest launches of any hardware I've ever seen.
I would say this is like pretty damn close to the Dreamcast levels of incompetence.
At least, you know, it's a good idea to, if you're going to release it in Best Buy and allow those pre-order people to buy it there, and they'll tell the Oculus, okay, we bought it. You don't have to send our pre-order. We got it, and they'll get their bonuses as well. But why is it coming into stores before the pre-orders? I don't get it. Why? What's their priority?
Well, it's PR. They want to get the marketing, and they want people to see the product so they can get more orders in. But it's a bad idea to put them on sale. It's a bad idea to actually offer them for retail ahead of the pre-orders for those customers that bought into your freaking product from Jump Street.
Go ahead.
It's almost like they don't know what they're doing.
But, you know, well, actually, here's the thing, though. They were sold to Facebook for $4 billion, if I remember. Is this Facebook's fault, or is it their fault, or what's going on here? Or did getting purchased by Facebook make them lazy?
I haven't seen Facebook do anything with this, or I haven't heard anything since that buyout or whatever.
Well, you can say the same thing about Microsoft and Minecraft, you know.
Yeah.
All Microsoft is doing is telling Mojang, okay, go do what you're doing.
They're actually, they've been updating each version of Minecraft, and I think they're trying to get it so Minecraft, when they update, they all update at the same time with the same content.
Right, that's, but you know, that isn't Microsoft's initiative. That's Mojang's initiative. Microsoft just bought them to say, make us money.
Yeah.
You know, they say, do what you got to do. Do whatever you want. We'll back you. Just make us money. Which is actually a proper way to do it. You know, I mean, Microsoft is telling them, whatever you've been doing, we like what you've been doing. So keep doing that, and we'll just take a cut of it. So, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I wonder how the HTC Vive is doing. What are they supposed to release? That's information we have to look up at some point. Because whatever's happening here, I don't know. It's like a clown car, you know? It's like, oh, if you pre-ordered, go to the store and buy it there. I mean, isn't part of a pre-order, you get it's the like thing shipped to your house and you don't have to go out?
It almost feels like they're trying to build up the hype and see if they can get more.
This is the wrong kind of hype. This is anti-hype.
I don't know. I don't feel any inclination for the Oculus Rift or VR in general.
Why?
I just don't want this big clunky headset on my head when I'm playing a game. I don't like the idea of the screen so close to my eyes, and I don't know.
TJ, let's wrap this up. What do you think? Last words on this item.
It's not a bad idea for marketing when it comes to actually putting the product in a good franchise to let people see and try it. But the idea of putting retail copies in the store ahead of people that, like I said, pre-ordered from the Kickstarter is stupid. It's downright stupid. And
it's insulting.
And if it's Facebook that's pushing the idea, that's one thing. But if the Oculus people, like, I can't even imagine. After all the work they've been trying to do to get people on board to do this, why they would do that.
Like I said, you know, I mean, we saw something was wrong when they kept on delaying, even though they were... See, the thing about this is that it was a Kickstarter project. That should have funded your project right there. You shouldn't have to have... And especially when you're flush with Facebook's money, there's no excuse. $4 billion, what did you do with it? Buy a couple of yachts?
This is all Jesse Eisenberg's fault.
No, I blame him for other things. Which is being one of the worst Lex Luthers ever committed to film.
Hey,
at least Kevin Spacey tried to act like Gene Hackman. You know, that was entertaining. Here, Jesse Eisenberg was trying to act like Heath Ledger.
He's not even... Ugh, it's not even like Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger was good. This is just manic and... I don't know. Just it's not the image that I thought the Joker would be. This is more like just I don't know. You like that
subtle.
Well,
it's supposed to be Lex Luthor to start with. It's not supposed to be the Joker. If you're going to complain about the Joker, complain about Jared Leto. We haven't seen
Joker
yet.
Oh, yeah, we complained about both of them. I'm sorry. Yeah, we did get a little confused there, didn't we?
Although, you know what? It's funny. The Jared Leto's Joker may not be the Joker. There's a lot of scuttlebutt that it's actually Jason Todd.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Huh.
At least that would be interesting.
It would be very interesting.
You know, but I don't know. Jesse Eisenberg was made to play Mark Zuckerberg, and that's it. That's it. That's all he was made to play, and he did it. Then he did, what was the name of that Max Landis scripted thing? American Ultra, right. And there, he's not a very convincing stoner. So,
That's kind of pathetic.
He's the most anxious stoner that has ever existed in a movie.
Well, maybe it's because he hadn't had his weed yet.
I've seen anxious stoners.
That when they haven't had their weed yet, yeah. It's like, where's my weed, man? Where's my weed?
Well, they can get paranoid about things after, you know, they're high and think all the cops are coming or something.
I don't know, I'm done with
Jesse Eisenberg is paranoid for like an hour and a half.
I'm done with Max Landis. The only thing he did good was, I forgot the name of it, Chronicle. Which also is, by the way, written by Max Landis and directed by Josh Trank. And that was a really good movie. Have you seen it? Chronicle? It's about these teenagers who develop superpowers.
Yeah, was that with through video cameras?
Yeah,
I like that. It had an Akira kind of feel to it.
Yeah, and the thing is, that was done by Max Landis and Josh Trank, and Josh Trank is best known for the Fantastic Four film that came out and bombed. And that was due to executive meddling, you know.
Mm.
And then Simon Pegg left because of executive meddling. And then Edgar Wright left because of executive meddling.
Gee.
Yeah. Oh, and Mark Webb left because of executive meddling. And Sam Raimi left because of executive meddling.
Wow, that's starting to sound like the Sliders there. Executive meddling.
Executive meddling, executive meddling, executive meddling. You know, the thing is, I didn't watch Sliders, by the way. My friend did, Jerry. And, you know, I caught a glimpse of it. It's sort of like Doctor Who. I don't watch Doctor Who, but occasionally he'll watch it. And I'll be doing something, and I'll be, you know, out of the corner of my eye watching and, you know, enjoying what's there. And then he said that Sliders tanked when those monsters started becoming part of the show. I forgot what it was called.
The Cro-Mags.
Yeah, the Cro-Mags.
Definitely,
you know?
I agree. That was when it really got bad. And I've always thought you kind of look like Jerry O'Connell. It's a little weird, but, you know.
So, thing, you know, Adam Nimoy was the driving force behind that show for a long time.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, Adam Nimoy is the son of Leonard Nimoy. And he also dated somebody that I was involved with after I was involved with him. So there's that connection. But no, I've never met Adam Nimoy. It's just an interesting connection.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Nintendo won't sell NX at a loss, and this comes from some games industry biz. Nintendo president Tatsumi Kimishima said that the company isn't planning on selling the Nintendo NX at a loss. In a post-earnings Q&A with investors last week, the executive said the company isn't considering pricing its next system at anything less than break-even. While most console manufacturers have frequently sold hardware at a loss with the intention of making it up through software sales, Nintendo has almost never used that strategy. One notable exception was the Wii U. According to Kimishima, when the Wii U was launched, the yen was very strong. I'm assuming that the situation will not repeat itself. Selling at a loss at launch would not support the business, so we are keeping that in mind in developing the NX. Kimishima also commented on lowered expectations surrounding the Wii U and how quickly the NX business will make up for the legacy console's flagging performance. He says, "We are predicting about 800,000 Wii U hardware sales in the fiscal year ending March 2017. Yeah, right. Which is a decrease of about 2.4 million units compared to the previous year. NX and smart device business will be essential to cover the gap, but we also expect download and content businesses to play a role. However, we are planning with the expectation that the NX sales will compensate for much of the impact on sales from reduced Wii U hardware sales," which is why I said earlier that neither Jordan nor I think that the Wii U, the NX is going to be 4K. Because in order for them to have 4K, they're going to have to sell at a loss.
Hmm. You know.
And the Wii, the original Wii, cost almost nothing to make. Which is why they made a huge amount of money on that thing.
So what does that mean about, I mean, like, can we make a prediction, a ballpark prediction on what their price of this console is going to be, because, you know, compared to...
You know, I think they're probably going to go $299, and it'll be 1080p HD. It won't be 4K, which will be disappointing everybody. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe Nintendo
I think 1080 HD is fine. I don't...
They think that the 4K TVs can upscale that. You know, I just wonder if they're going to go with the dual tier.
I don't really care if it's 4X or 1080. The game needs to be fun. The console needs to be fun.
I can hear Paul right now about Legend of Zelda, because he says that they've been doing the same Zelda game.
Yeah. Are you gonna give a shit if it's 4K or 4K, but it's the same damn game? You know, I mean, do you want to buy Ocarina of Time in 4K, or do you want something new and different and fun? And it's 1080 HD. You know.
See, was there a name for the new Legend of Zelda game?
Or I don't think
Legend
so.
Just Legend of Zelda right now.
Just Legend of Zelda.
Okay. Just Legend of Zelda.
You know, it might be a good idea for them to do... Picture this. How about them doing a reboot and just turning the original gold cartridge Legend of Zelda into a 3D world?
I have thought about that so many times, and I would be so stoked and so on board from Jump Street if they ever did that. That would probably be enough to get me to buy whatever system that they were going to be coming out with.
And, you know, you'd expand the world a little bit, you know, because basically the original gold cart Legend of Zelda was a bunch of dungeons.
Right.
You know,
I would love
this
them
maybe
to make
you'll
it...
have overland and cities and people you can talk to, while the dungeons will be the same focus, just have them a little deeper.
I don't know. I would almost want them to just go with a straight minimalist route and just throw you into the world.
No. What happens is you have that, and then you have an unlockable original Legend of Zelda in the game itself. It's like you have in Animal Crossing, you know, you unlock it, you know, like you unlock Donkey Kong or something like that.
Like, all I want is for you to walk, like, you go into the game, there's no instructions whatsoever, you walk into a cave and a guy gives you a sword and then you're on your way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just make it simple and streamlined. It doesn't have to be complicated.
You know, I'm thinking, if the NX is going to be replacing the 3DS as well, I wonder if the NX will have Street Pass.
Probably. I can't imagine it wouldn't.
Yeah, they seem to like doing that, having you connect with other players. That's always been, a good point, I thought, with the 3DS.
Because whenever you go, the only way in America, because in Japan, everybody's on public transit, so you always get the Street Pass activating almost everywhere. But in the U.S., you have to go to conventions, right? And at E3, I mean, there were some of the strangest Street Passes I was watching on Paul's thing. Like, one of his thing had four exactly same-dressed Miis, all with tall black hats and black cloaks, calling them, they theme-named themselves. It was just really weird and strangely wonderful that people would actually do that, you know?
That is crazy. But... yeah, it's like there's so many IPs that I think they need to explore too, and that they can use, like the Kid Icarus. I'm always surprised that never became a bigger franchise.
What, you weren't a big fan of that stupid 3DS game?
I loved it.
I didn't play that now.
Kid Icarus Uprising was killer on the wrists because it was a sort of a gallery shooter, but yeah. There was a lot of interesting stuff in that game, and
that was they were trying to take advantage. They were trying to show off the 3D, you know, the depth effects of that thing.
Yeah. And I think it was a pretty fun game, like as far as just like the whole story and the mix between gallery shooter and actual 3D action brawl, sort of like a brawler actually.
So, yeah. Like I said, I'm mildly interested in the NX, if it's going to be both a console and a handheld.
Yeah,
but, you know, I'm not the biggest Zelda fan in the world. That's not going to sell the system for me. There's got to be other software than just Zelda. You know, yeah. And I may ask at the Nintendo booth, is this it? if all they're going to be highlighting is Zelda, is this it? You know?
Yeah, because I think a lot of people are kind of sick of Zelda, but I like Zelda, personally.
It's not that they're sick of Zelda.
I know.
But they're not sick of Zelda. They're sick of the same game over and over and over again. I mean, you can get away with that with a platformer like Super Mario Brothers, right? Because that's all it is. But Zelda is a narrative
structure.
Even that
they change up.
What?
Even Mario, they change
the platform.
Well,
the thing is that with Mario, you're just doing challenges, you know, timing challenges. Zelda is a narrative.
Yeah.
There is no narrative in Super Mario Brothers. If the narrative in Super Mario Brothers is your princess is in another castle, that's its narrative.
Whatever it is you're looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. Zelda is a narrative. You start off as Link, usually waking up in the beginning of the game. And then something's happening, and you have to do something. But you have to do the same thing over and over and over again. And, you know, a lot of people are starting to reassess Wind Waker, because it's actually something a little different than the usual Ocarina of Time type
gameplay. A lot of the mobile Legends of Zelda, you weren't fighting Ganon. And in Majora's Mask, you're not fighting Ganon. You're doing a time paradox in Majora's Mask. So there are quite a few Zeldas that actually you're doing something different and not...
Yeah, but I'm talking about gameplay. I'm talking about, you know, the gameplay, not the story. You know?
Well, the gameplay I'm pretty much fine with. It's
you know,
the story that needs changing.
If Paul was here, he would discuss this a lot more fluently than me, because he is a heavy Zelda fan. And
you always have your standard items in Zelda. You always have the arrows, the bombs, the hookshot, all stuff like that. And that's kind of what people talk about when they talk, well, it's just the same thing over and over again. You're going to have
also,
a water...
How about this? How about this? How about another time-traveling Zelda game, like in...
Majora's Mask.
What? No, the other one.
Ocarina of Time?
What? No,
Ocarina
there was another
time?
One.
Okay, so there's Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, A Link Between Ages.
Oh, the Link to the Past.
A Link to the
Past.
Right. Well, how about this? What if you sort of go Ultima 1 on Zelda? So anybody who's played Ultima 1, you actually went between various times, like the future, the modern present, you know, our modern present, the past, and also planets, right? You could go to... Mercury, you could go to Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and all that stuff, and really expand the universe extremely, right? So you have a lot of variety. So imagine Link riding on a subway, you know, or doing something like that, and then going to the past where it's dinosaurs, and then going to Mars, and then going to the regular Hyrule, right? You know, just having... And all of them are connected in some way, and you have to align them in some way to win the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, you know, something in which you're really expanding the player's head on what they have to do, you know, and you don't tell them what they're supposed to do. They figure it out narratively, you know?
Yeah.
Something like that. But the problem with Nintendo, by the way, is that they want to make sure two-year-olds know how to play your game. One of the things what Paul complained about was that it told you everything you had to do. Oh, to swing your sword, press A. You told me that 5 minutes ago. Well, swing your sword to press A. You know, that sort of stuff. You know, they handhold you from beginning to end. Like the entire game is a tutorial. And that's another of Paul's complaints.
There needs to be a way to tell Nintendo that adults want to play your games and not be treated like children. There needs to be a way to tell Nintendo this.
Well, even like the original Zelda, like anyone
the original Zelda
play
didn't tell you crap. I mean, yes, it told you how to use some of the things, but if you wanted to find certain, I remember I had to go into guys to find some of those dungeons because I couldn't figure it out. Oh, you have to do this tree. Okay. You have to hit
this tree. The whole point of it, though, is the whole point of Zelda should be, hey, here's a world. Go explore.
Yeah, and experiment and try out things. And, you know, I guess some people might argue that that was the point of Nintendo Powers.
I mean, they didn't tell you how you're supposed to kill those guys with shields, right? Or whatever those guys was, you had to attack them from the side. You know, you had to figure out how to beat each monster. Like, and it didn't tell you how to do it. You said use common sense. You know, if I remember, it was either, was it the sides that you can only hit them? You couldn't hit them from the back, you couldn't hit them from the front, you had to hit them on the side, or stuff like that, or they could only be hit if you stunned them first with a light, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's been ages since I played 1985 Zelda, so.
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about. I think there was these knights that you couldn't hit in front, and you had to get to the side of them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's something you could experiment and figure out on your own.
Or even just visually, you could figure it out. You didn't need the game to tell you, oh, you have to hit these guys on the side.
Yeah.
Which is what the other Zelda games tell you to do.
Yeah. And there's an argument I've heard made several times by good friends of mine recently, and the more I hear it, the more I think about it, the more I agree with it, is that Dark Souls, going back to that, is Dark Souls is kind of the Zelda Castlevania ones. If they're the kind of like Zeldas and Castlevania ones that we
actually
would like to have, only because they get like those games give you a rudimentary amount of information and then throw you in there and you go figure it out.
There was a modern day Zelda game that was developed by Vigil Games and was published by THQ. It was called Darksiders, which was actually a Zelda game when you got down to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time I've ever heard that descriptor given to Darksiders.
It is, but it's a Zelda game. You know, what's it called? It's a very. When you break it down to its base parts, it's a Zelda game.
I've heard that before, and I would agree. I would agree to quite an extent that it's actually built a lot around pretty much most of the same things as Zelda.
Yeah, and you know, and if you really want to get into it, games like Diablo or Zelda type games too, you know. Although the thing about Diablo is that it was actually just a hack and slash like Zelda, but it was more based on the loot rather than puzzle solving.
Yeah, Zelda was about puzzle solving.
Zelda's about puzzle solving, but Diablo does take some of its cues from Zelda. You have the dungeon, you have the map, you have the town, you have the town center.
Well, then that's almost every RPG.
No, but I'm just
saying.
But and then you have and you do have to have strategy on how to attack monsters in that game. And not all of them you just click, 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 click. You know.
Really? You could have fooled me.
No, because some of them are harder to hit with certain weapons. You have to choose your loadout carefully in that game. If you really want to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Okay. Because just click, 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 click.
Well, here, okay. Zelda, I grant you, is more puzzle-based, and it's almost a puzzle game that's disguising itself as an action RPG, you know?
Yeah.
I
think puzzles should be part of RPG experience and adventure experience. Like, not having puzzles would seem strange to me.
Well, you know, there's games like Icewind Dale, which don't have any story. Their story is fight everything. You know,
There is a story. It's not just from. It's just not from the character's view. You're making your own
story. It's an excuse.
There is a story you're exploring, and it has puzzles and adventure and killing stuff. But it's more than just killing stuff. There's an actual story going on that you have to explore, and you have to figure out who is doing the evil there. You know, in the first game, there's this merchant actually that has you don't know it at the time.
Icewind Dale is basically an adult Final Fantasy Tactics. You know, it's all about the combat and planning out the combat. Yes, there's a story there, but it's sort of an excuse plot.
I didn't think Final Fantasy Tactics was for children. I mean, at least
I'm just saying. You get my idea, though. It's just okay.
Yeah.
It's Final Fantasy Tactics using AD&D characters. Okay, and you know. The puzzle in Icewind Dale is in the combat, you know, because since the game is very combat heavy, a lot of it is going to be you figuring out your loadout and how to tackle the situation, you know.
Yeah, it's just that Icewind Dale is a little bit more real time than Tactics. Tactics is true turn based.
No, you can have tactics with real time. I mean, look at Kohan.
You can have tactics in both. Tactics is turn based. It's not like when it's your.
I'm not
turn.
Talking about Final Fantasy Tactics. I just mean tactics in general.
Yeah, you can have tactics in both games.
But I'm just saying that, you know, it's like I said, Final Fantasy Tactics is just stringing along a bunch of battles with a connective tissue, you know, between them. That's what Icewind Dale is. So I mean, it's not saying Icewind Dale is bad. You know, there's a lot of people who didn't give a shit about Savarok, and didn't give a shit about Imogen, and didn't care about the Lord of Murder. They didn't want all that clunky story. What they wanted was action. You know, it's like it's like an action movie. While Baldur's Gate was Lord of the Rings. You know, what's it called? Icewind Dale was a fantasy action movie in which, you know. But that's neither here nor there right now. Let's get back to Zelda. And, you know, even if you have, you know, what would be really nice is if you had something like Zelda 2, which was a 2D platformer. And, you know, that's something they should re-examine, you know, because why not make a Metroidvanian Zelda?
They tried that
once. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Zelda 2, I know, but I'm just saying, why not re-examine that? Why not make another game like Zelda 2? The problem with Zelda 2 was that the technology wasn't ready for it.
You know?
It's sort of like Ultima 9. You know, Ultima 9 was Skyrim before Skyrim, except they didn't have the technology for it, so it was all broken, you know? They couldn't handle it. So,
they do need to make, I think, more Metroidvania-like games, because there's this Ori and the Blind Forest, which was very Metroidvania-like.
Yeah, we have also Salt and Sanctuary, which is Metroidvania meets Dark Souls. I mean, they're releasing Shadow. Shadow Complex. I think that's coming to PlayStation finally, if I'm not mistaken, or is it coming to PC?
It's coming everywhere. Shadow Complex has been showing up on every system so far.
Yeah, I mean, so there's that. I mean, you know, I'm wondering why there hasn't been a Shadow Complex 2, because it was a smash hit when it was first released. Everybody loved it. I still haven't finished it.
So. Yeah, I think the issue with going back to that idea of putting Zelda back in a Metroidvania style is that everyone who knows Zelda would immediately go, oh no, Zelda 2, don't
Why
do
not?
That.
Why not? As a matter of fact, I know people who like Zelda 2. And here's the thing. They may say, oh no, don't do that, but if the reviews are great, they're going to buy it, because a good game is a good game, no matter what style it is.
Yeah, I agree. But Nintendo at this point, they don't take risks. Yeah, that's what I was getting at. They don't take risks.
Anyways, we're going to move on.
I agree, they don't.
We're going to move on to the last item. Go ahead, TJ.
Classic Mega Drive ROM hacks hit Steam Workshop from Rock Paper Shotgun. The Sega Mega Drive and Genesis Classics Hub has now arrived on Steam, following its announcement. For the most part, it isn't all that interesting, even if playing classic games from yesteryear via a drab virtual bedroom against eerie acoustics is your bag. No, what's exciting is the fact that Sega have added Steam Workshop support to their library of Mega Drive and Genesis games on the platform, allowing intuitive modders to upload and share loads of ROM hacks of the classics. Here are a few that caught our eye. As you might expect, the multitude of hacks and mods range from the sublime to the ridiculous. The former camp boasts tinkering such as the Blad 768's Sonic 3 and Knuckles' entirely hard bosses edition 2, which ups the difficulty of standard in-level bosses, adds entirely new bosses, and introduces nifty features such as ring insurance, a bonus which lets players collect 10 rings from checkpoints prior to said end-of-zone boss encounters. Patrick Cruz's Streets of Fighter series welcomes Street Fighter characters such as Ryu, Vega, and Chun-Li into the Streets of Rage world, whereas SMO5's Echo the Orca swaps the familiar dolphin protagonist out for an orca whale. Both are relatively simple but distinctly cool tweaks. Then there's odd concoctions like the Raven Freaks' Ring the Ring, which appears to swap Sonic for a ring. Ever wanted to play as a ring instead of Sonic? The creator asks in the hack's description. Ring the Ring is just a hack for you. Then there's Adrock 4's contribution, which is not only the weirdest, but also, at the time of writing, also the most downloaded of the lot. Streets of Rage 2, except it makes that weird Tim Allen noise when people die. Oh, okay. Which is... That's a sounds great. Interestingly, Sega appear to be letting users police themselves for now, and so far haven't drawn a line between legitimate hacks and copyright infringement.
So yeah, wait, I mean, is this being sold without Sega's permission?
No, here's the thing. Sega released Sega Mega Drive and Genesis Classics on Steam, but they also opened up the Steam Workshop, which allows people to put in mods.
Oh, okay, okay.
And these are all classic. See, here's the thing. These ROM hacks have been around forever, right?
Yeah.
This is just a way of distributing them, you know?
I'd like to put in here, because I've had an idea when I read that, and I think, I don't think they'll do it, but it'd be awesome if, like, yeah, if they didn't want to do backwards compatibility like Nintendo, Microsoft, and Xbox, they could actually put their games on Steam then, or on some sort of digital platform like this. That way you could get the games, and then their new stuff wouldn't have to worry about doing backwards compatible hardware. You just put it in a digital format, let people play it on their PC or whatever, and you know, yeah, and then you go on making your new spangled hardware.
Yeah, I mean, this was released in 5 volumes before, mm-hmm. not for everything, right? So
right.
The hub is basically all of them, right? And on PC, which allows people to do stuff on the PC that they couldn't do on other platforms.
Yeah.
So the games that are included in this game are Altered Beast, Comic Zone, Crackdown, Echo the Dolphin, Gain Ground, Golden Axe, Shinobi, and all that stuff. Blah 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 blah. You know, you've
that's
heard them all.
That's the one I wanted, but what? I didn't see it.
What?
Phantasy Star.
Oh, let me see. Does it have Phantasy Star? Keep in mind, Phantasy Star is a major game. Oh, there it is. Volume 5 is Phantasy Star 2, Phantasy Star 3, Phantasy Star 4.
Oh.
The original Phantasy Star is? I don't know. It could have been named something different, actually. No. I'm pretty sure it's...
I see Phantasy Star 4 now, yeah.
So, yeah, I've never... Like I said, console RPGs... By the time these started getting out, I was on the Commodore 64 and I was playing C64 RPGs, like all the Ultima games.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so that's the question of the week, by the way. So, have you ever played any console ROM hacks?
Yes, all the time.
Okay, so before you answer, for me, all I've done is MAME, which isn't a hack, it's just ROMs. And selecting the dip switches doesn't count, because that's what the arcade owner would do, is flip those dip switches to make the game easier or harder, depending on whatever, you know. So, TJ, have you ever fooled around with any console ROM hacks?
Yeah, I've played a few. One of the notable ones that comes to mind recently was Kaizo Mario, which is just like a ROM hack of Mario that makes it of Super Mario World that makes it ridiculously hard.
Why is it that everybody wants to make it just hard? Is it that they're bored?
Yeah, I think
I mean,
they're bored and they want a challenge.
Yes.
I mean, they used to have these challenges. Complete Mega Man firing only once.
That's...
It's an achievement on the Xbox 360 version. Wow. Only fire once the entire game. And it is possible to complete the game doing that, yes. So,
crazy.
Scott, how about you?
I've played a very weird, Kid Icarus-like thing. It was it was like a homebrew kind of hack thing where they used... sprites from the previous game, make their own little adventure with it.
You know, I'll include Homebrew too as part of hacks. Screw
and it. I also play translated games like Bahamut Lagoon and Terranigma. So that's, you know, that's a, I guess, hacked game because they translate the whole thing for you.
So here's a little interesting factoid you may or may not know. Now, the Jaguar boasted it had a 32X processor, right? But the games never looked like that. And the reason for that is that the developers didn't get any instructions how to develop for the Jaguar. So what they did was they developed the controllers were 16-bit, and they made games that were playing on the controllers and not on the processor of the Jaguar itself, which is why even though they were 32K, they looked like crap. They looked like everything else. There's a lot of... All of the best games for the Jaguar have come out after it was gone, and people started making games using the 32-bit controller language and making these really gorgeous games that were homebrew that other developers, you know, professional developers couldn't be bothered to do. you know. And who knows, had Atari been smart enough to say, okay, here's how you make games for the actual, what's it called, actual, you know, console hardware, not just the controller.
That feels like a major faux pas that probably cost them their hardware.
Why Atari doesn't exist anymore, except as a shell company.
Yeah, shelling software.
I mean, Atari could have had the NES, but they didn't, so. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast, or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon, he is at Alpha Shard, and TJ is at Johnny Chugs. With one G. How, you know, every time I hear Chugs, I think Jugs, and then I mentally think of Jugs with two Gs, which, as everybody know, is a boob magazine.
Yeah, because that's where Jonah's head is at all times.
You're calling me a boob?
No, anyway. I'm just saying your head's in the gutter.
Oh, well, I'd prefer it to be in the gutter than in the air. Anyways, we will talk to you last week. And write in and let us know what you think.
All right. Have fun, everyone. Happy gaming, everyone.